What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm your host, Peyton Heben. Today's episode is episode 28. We are joined by Mitch Gowdy. He is a facility manager and works in music marketing. He is the owner of City Limits Studios and co-founder of M Squared Media and Marketing, alongside one of our previous guests on the podcast, Mitch Wallace. So please welcome the other Mitch, Mitch Gowdy.
Hey, what's up? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, dude, absolutely. Thanks for coming on. This, we're in his studio, so yeah. You didn't have to come very far.
It's interesting. I was a part of construction of this, so sitting, actually being interviewed, it's a different view. I like it.
I never got to see it when it was, like, in construction. I know I saw pictures from, like, Nikki T and Brill when they were like, oh, dude, because I was filming in my apartment.
Yeah.
Like, I had gone on Sweetwater and bought, like, a bunch of podcast equipment. And if you go back and listen to, like, my first, like, 5 or 6 episodes, maybe like more than that, but it's like the sound isn't all that great because it's echoey, and it was echoey in my Germantown apartment. But yeah, they were sending me pictures like, dude, can't wait to have you in here.
Yeah,
and then now here we are.
Yeah, I ran into Matt at Planet Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out what we wanted to do with the square footage. We'd just taken over the creative building, had a lot of plans drawn up, and I thought, man, that would be cool to have artists coming in here constantly. I knew of Raised Rowdy from all the rounds and everything. And I was like, I think that's Matt. I don't want to be that guy who goes up while someone's working out. And so I didn't. I just sent him a DM and referenced that I thought I saw him. And I was like, hey, come check out this spot. We're brand new. And yeah, he came over. And luckily, he saw the vision. And so did Nikki T. Because, I mean, I'm literally just pointing at warehouse space.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what it could be. And they were pretty trusting, which was cool. And we drove the plans and did it. So it's super cool. I'm really happy with them and the fact that they were willing to be a part of this.
Because yeah,
this was a little bit of a shot in the dark.
Yeah, dude, it's such a sweet setup. I mean, you really couldn't ask for a better space, I guess.
Thanks.
I mean, it's outside of town, too, which is nice. The traffic sucks a little bit if you're coming from downtown.
Yeah, I always tell people to avoid 4 to 6, because if they don't come at that time, they're like, oh, this is easy. It's like, you know, 15 minutes of interstate. If they come at 4 to 6, they're like, man, I can't believe I have to drive all the way out here.
Yeah.
And it's like, I promise you it's not that far.
It was a 45-minute ride for me today, but I also left at 5 o'clock.
Yep. Yeah. So. Every time you come, because you're working with the music industry people, it's always like, I always feel bad when you walk in. I'm like, he's got to think this is like an eternity away. But
I mean, it does feel like it. But also, like, I know that when there's nothing going on, when it's not rush hour, I can get here in like 18 minutes.
Right. Yeah. That's what we try to pitch to people most of the time. And also, the other thing, because I was worried about that when we took over this building. And so people know what we're referencing. We have a warehouse space right outside of Nashville. And we've turned it into creative studios, photo studios, video studios, and a recording studio. And there's a bunch of just creatives in this building. And my worry when we were taking it over was that we're too far outside of town. And so hence the name City Limit Studios. We're right on the city limit of Nashville. And people who work downtown even, they'll say, oh man, you know, that's 15 minutes away. And it's like, dude, try to cross from one side of Nashville to the other side, it's 15 minutes too. It's just you're sitting in traffic, you know.
Yeah.
So luckily we haven't had too much of an issue with it.
Yeah,
a
dude,
little bit.
I mean,
I'm honest about it.
I live like right downtown near the Capitol building.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother plays baseball at Belmont, and the field is like right down 11th Avenue and then up like Edge Hill or whatever. And realistically that should be like 4 minutes away, but it takes almost 15 minutes to get there because like driving through the gulch, you're having to stop all the time. It's packed all the time.
Yep.
So like it's 15 minutes to get anywhere in town.
Bingo. Yeah. That's my sales pitch at least,
yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, that's just living in a city, I guess.
Yeah. I had to get used to it. I'm not from a big city. I'm from a small town in Iowa, but, Nashville still feels a little bit like a small town, which I like, but yeah, the traffic I could do without.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your story, where you come from, like what you kind of grew up doing and any musical influences, if that even played a part in your life at the time. And
yeah. So I'll start at like 12, cause no one cares necessarily before that.
No, I want to hear like right when you were born,
right
at the
hospital. When I was born, what I was thinking. I have no idea. So I'm from a small town in Iowa. is about 9,000 people. It's Fairfield, Iowa. It's the home of Transcendental Meditation, which is kind of weird and interesting. It's a very like creative and different town. You would think small town Iowa is like farmers and stuff, and it is. Half of the population is that, but then there's also this university in town that brings a lot of like music and art and all sorts of things to a small town, which is interesting and cool. I obviously love music, played some sports, growing up, but music was definitely what I was interested in. And, my mom's a business teacher, which now that I'm getting older and looking at like how life is playing out, at least thus far, it's like not that surprising, but, that I'm in business now, but she's a business teacher. And, my dad worked for a pipeline, and also he's a professor. And so, when I was 12, I started a mobile DJ company because I thought our middle school dances sucked. And genuinely, I would go and I was like, these people are playing not the current hits. And my mom was the business teacher who put on like events for middle school dances. That's how they make money, $5 in the door. And I lobbied and lobbied and tried to get her to hire me to DJ. And my dad brought home speakers, and I learned, and I bought a small light, like 4-par can light. And luckily my mom's cool and was like, sure, we'll give this a shot. And I made like $100 that night and took that $100 and bought a bigger mixer. And, you know, we ended up running 4 rigs a night when I was senior in high school. So we were doing proms, weddings, school dances. That was kind of our claim to fame. Like, we were the kids that knew the music. And
what were some of the songs you were playing?
Man, Flow Rider.
Oh yeah.
Did you get down to Flow Rider?
Yeah, like yeah. The low.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I loved country stuff too, but mostly we stuck with like Lil Wayne and Flow Rider, and everyone was like, this is the coolest. And yeah, so I put on events, and then I also play guitar and bass. And so I started a band. It was called Blister. And it lasted like 2 rehearsals and fell apart. But yeah, so that was kind of my musical background. And then I had a partner in that, and he wanted to keep it going, and I wanted to be a rock star. So I was like, cool, you keep the business going. He paid for the equipment, and I started doing music and
was
performing.
The band, the Blister band, was that rock?
So yeah,
you're like Motley Crue.
Blister didn't work out. Blister fell apart like most small indie rock bands. And then I found out most of my writing was country, and so I started playing country music, and I would play local wineries and things like that, and had a stint of releasing country music, and it was a fun part of my life. And then I started a media company doing marketing, and I did that while I was doing bands. And looking back now, it's obvious that I loved the business side more than I liked the artistry side. Mm-hmm. But I definitely loved, you know, putting out my own music and being able to promote it and be the guy on stage. And but it didn't take long for me to figure out that I enjoyed more like figuring out. I designed my own light show. I designed my own sound system. Like, I'm a nerd. And so although I liked playing and being the guy on stage, and I'm rambling here. Is that cool?
Yeah, dude, okay, go for cool. It.
So
you have the floor.
The analogy I use with it is like, if you could be, let's say, Luke Combs, and you could walk out on stage and the fans are there and the tour bus pulled up, you didn't manage the tour bus breaking down or anything like that. Fans were screaming. They loved every song, and he worked hard to get there. I'm just running an analogy here. Would you want that to be you? And I think most people would say, absolutely. Like, you're the karaoke king in that scenario. But what they don't think about is the hours on the bus and being told no 17 times and touring at local colleges where the person even forgot they booked you that night. And, you know, dealing with social media and people asking a lot of you and all that type of stuff. It's like being an artist is so difficult. And I found myself fairly quickly figuring out like, oh, that's actually not the route I want to go. I would see other artists who like thrived and loved it and were like so good at it. And I'm more, found myself to be more introverted and enjoying the techie side of things. And I'm like, I think there's a change that needs to happen here. So I started the marketing company with one of my friends, and that was successful. We did B2B sales, which is business to business. We were offering websites, social media, photography, videography, all sorts of things. And then I always wanted to make the jump to Nashville. And so I was able to make the jump to Nashville when I exited that company. And my partner kept it going and super successful. He was great. And I moved down here to try to do it in music. I really wanted to be around the music scene. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know if I wanted to be a tour manager, or if I wanted to be a songwriter, or if I wanted to be a producer or a studio manager. Like, I genuinely didn't know, but I knew I needed to be down here. And so after we got here, a few years later, something interesting you saw when you pulled in is I've lived in a van for 5 years down here. The opportunity came up for us to run City Limit Studios. So the place I was renting from went out of business, and it left the lease open. And I was lucky enough to see like how they were running the place. And I was like, cool, this could work. It just needs someone to work it. And they wanted to move on to a different course. And I was like, this might be the perfect fit for me because I enjoy being around art. I love building things. And then I can help facilitate records being made, podcasts being made. And it's been an interesting jump. It's hard to tell your life story in 5-10 minutes. I don't know how long that was. Dude, I'm sorry. The cliff notes.
Yeah. We have I think I usually shoot for an hour, hour and 10. Dude, yeah, you have the whole hour to say whatever you want.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I kind of want to hear more about your story, like living in the van situation. Cause a lot of people don't realize, at least for more my side of things, people from my hometown, they think oh, you moved to Nashville and you get to be around famous people. You get to like live this dream, party for a living. Everything's amazing, but they don't see the shit that you kind of have to go through, the work that gets put into it and the sacrifices that are made. And that's a sacrifice being made. Like you love it. It's awesome. Right.
Yeah.
But people,
some days I hate it.
Yeah.
but most of the time, yeah, it's
you're
great.
Doing it and you're right out here.
Yeah.
You're committed to running this and really doing it. So I kind of just want to hear more about that.
Yeah. So when we moved to town, we got an apartment, but it was one of the newer apartments. So they were running a deal. I might be making this part up, but it was one of those, when we saw it, because it was digital, I don't even know if it was made yet. You know, how they'll draw up plans and they'll say this apartment, whatever. We signed for it because it was such a good deal. They were trying to get people in, brand new apartment complex. So the pricing was high because Nashville pricing is high, and we knew we needed to be here. We, meaning my wife and I, and our dog. And we were there for about a year, and we were spending most of our time working for a marketing company and then also making music on the side. And so we would be in the studio late at night, and basically our apartment became a mattress because we were either going out to meet people, we would be working or in the studio. And so it's like, man, we're spending a lot of money for just a mattress for us to sleep and wake up and go to work the next day, and maybe we only got 6 hours of sleep, and the apartment sent a notice at the end of the 12 months, and it was like, your rent is going up. And it wasn't little bit. It's now it's an established, really nice apartment complex. Mm-hmm. And you came in at the intro pricing. So it was a jump of $400 a month or something like that. And it wasn't, we could afford it, but it was do we want to keep spending this much money on rent? Especially when what we're trying to do takes money, making records takes a lot of money. Going out, parking, all that stuff is really expensive. So
parking is terrible.
Yeah.
That's probably $1,500 a month for me just in parking.
Genuinely. It's it's crazy just to own a car.
Yeah.
But we knew we wanted to be down here and we didn't want to move away. So my wife had the idea. She's like, well, we want to go tour. She does artistry, and I was helping her and doing production and marketing. And she's like, hey, we could get a tour bus and live in a tour bus. And I was like, that's actually a good idea. And I mean, we don't know any better. And so I looked it up and it's like $400,000 for a used, you know, one that who knows if it actually works. And I'm like, yeah, well, so that's not going to happen. And she'd actually seen a thing called van life on Pinterest. And she's like, what do you think about van life? And I had not heard of it. And so she pulled some pictures up on Pinterest and they make it look amazing, you know? And I was sold because I saw the business side. I was like, oh, we could just cut off $1,800 a month, put it into a car payment, build this out, and then just live. Now, I didn't fully think through like the realities of that, where it's like, sell all your stuff. Where are you going to park? How are you going to be safe? Like all these things I didn't even think about. I was just like, that's the answer, because we can't necessarily keep paying this rent. We can't keep paying this rent. I was on the phone with the dealership the next day, and we bought a brand new Dodge Ram ProMaster with a really good deal. This was before COVID. Now they're so expensive, and everyone knows about van life, so the prices have gone way up. But we got it for a really good price. And our last 2 months of our rent, we parked our van outside of the apartment complex and built it out into an RV / like tour place. And yeah, we've been living in it now, coming on 5 years. So, right? Yeah, coming on 5 years. So
nice.
Yeah. And we would just sleep in Walmart parking lots and Cracker Barrel parking lots. And then that allowed us to make music during the day, because we wouldn't have to make as much money throughout the day, because our expenses were a lot lower. Mm-hmm. So we could say no to more gigs and yes to things that typically it's like, that's not paying us enough, but it would be good for us to be there. We were able to take those types of opportunities with the sacrifice of like, you don't have air conditioning, and where do you go to the bathroom, and these types of things. So you're welcome to ask more questions about that, but some people know van life and understand. But
yeah, I mean, I get a general idea of it. I mean, I think it's just a cool like sacrifice. You know, I know an artist that has been considering doing the same thing, because they're paying, I think, like $1,800 a month to live in a one bedroom apartment in town, where it's just like they'd rather just live in a van and spend the money that they're going to be using on rent to record songs and like kind of invest in themselves. And I think that's what you guys kind of did, was just, and you invested in yourself, like you're going to build this out. It's going to be, and I mean, it's insane now. I remember walking in here and like things were just being built too, and now that's like a whole thing. And then you just started the M Squared, like with Mitch.
Yep.
So kind of tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So City Limit Studios has been going under our management for over a year. It was a creative building, but it was not built out to the extent that it is now. Mitch Wallace needed a place to work, and that is who ended up being my partner in M Squared. And he was doing digital marketing, and I was like, perfect, that fits right in. He's done Tim McGraw's tour. He's done work with all sorts of country people that I was like, this with Raised Rowdy, it's perfect. I think even Nikki T made the connection for us. And so he got an office here, and we joked around about like doing business together, because he knew I had a background in video and photo and did marketing, but I was running City Limit Studios at that time, just trying to, it's my first year, so I'm trying to figure it out. And he came up to me one day and said, hey, I have a really big client. I need a second cam. Is there any chance you're available? And if I play that into the van story, it's partially because of that. It's like, I didn't have the funding to just be around during the day to be able to take on random gigs. So it's like little sacrifices like that, that you make, that it was right place, right time. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I have other things I'm doing today, but sure. Like if you need help, I've been wanting to work with you for a little bit. Let's go. And that actually ended up being Haley Welch, who's the people call her the Hawk Tua girl. And he had a really good idea for her social media, and he just needed an extra guy. And when we started working together, it was like, we just learned like, oh, this is a really good fit. Like I was getting this shot, he was getting this shot. And then I put the edit together afterward, and he was headed out on tour at that time with Luke Combs, with Drew Parker. And, so he's like, dude, the fact like I went out on tour, the edit got done on time. It was great. This is huge for me.
Just a good system.
Yeah, yeah. Before it was like he had to turn down so many gigs because it was just him. And so M Squared wasn't born then, but that was like the start of us like starting to work together. And then another gig would come up and he'd send it my way. And also people were booking this studio and it's like I was sending it his way. And just eventually it came to the point where it was like, this would be good. I have a few skills he doesn't. He has a few skills that I don't. And they kind of complement each other. And yet we're still able to both do video and photo ourselves. So like we're able to take on gigs and not need each other. But I do more business management. He's really great with like helping musicians blow up online, all sorts of types of TikTok videos, music videos, stuff like that. And so that was kind of the start of it. And
yeah. If you, I mean, if you guys have listened to this podcast before, you might have heard the Mitch Wallace episode. We shot it with Trey Lewis, not with Trey Lewis, but we were in Denver, Colorado at the Grizzly Rose for the Trey Lewis show because at the time he was on the road with them. Is he still on the road with Trey?
Yeah. He's on the road with Trey Andrews still.
So, yeah. So, you guys actually, if you want to talk about that, you guys work a lot with Trey Lewis.
Yep. Now. Yeah. Trey's awesome.
Yeah. So, you guys have, like, I guess two flagship people. Yeah. It would be Trey Lewis and then Haley, the Hawktua girl, which is a whole nother thing I kind of want to talk about.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Yeah. I kind of explain, like, what it's been like working with someone, like, in the, like, that's, that does music in Trey, that had a viral moment with Dick Down in Dallas and kind of, like, what it's been keeping up on that momentum and social game and the marketing.
Yeah.
And then also someone that had that viral moment of the Hawktua video that everybody in the world saw. And now she's like one of the biggest celebrities in the world because of it. So kind of just have at it.
Yeah. I'll start with Trey. So I'm fairly new to Trey's team. Mitch Wallace and Trey have worked together for years and years. They were with each other during Dick Down in Dallas. So their history is great. Me joining that team with just some of the skills that I have, such as like running digital ads, has been really cool. Trey also is, he's been super nice the few times I've worked with him. He's seen the vision again, like Matt Brill. It's like the squad we found, and I've heard this said, and I don't know if it's true cause I'm still new to town, but like you kind of find your team or your squad and it starts to gel. It's like, I felt like I didn't have that for a long time, but like the squad around here, the Raised Rowdy guys, Trey, it's like they believe in you and it's been really cool. It doesn't feel like a one up game, which is how I felt initially when I moved to town. A lot of the people I was working with, it was like this weird competition and all this stuff. I've never felt that from Trey. It's like Trey saw we could do visualizers and we could do music videos. And he knew like, hey, this is a fairly new company. It's a little bit of a risk to do that. But he's willing to take the risk and be like, but there's also a chance that we knock it out of the park for a really good price, you know? So I've loved working with Trey. Also, like, I genuinely laugh every time I work with Trey. Like,
oh, yeah, he's awesome. He's so funny.
Yeah. And his music's great, too. Like, my first time meeting Trey, he rented out City Limit Studios with Mitch. I didn't know it was Trey, and I can hear what's happening in the content studio, which is like we have a white infinity wall, a flat black studio, and photographers and videographers rent it out to make music videos and things like that. So Mitch rented it out with Trey, and I can hear the music because it plays over PA, and I was like, this is actually genuinely really good. I can't say that about every booking we have, but this one was like, this is really good. And then he played it acoustically and it was just as good acoustic. And turns out it was Trey Lewis. And I was like, dude, like I only knew Trey from Dick Down in Dallas. Obviously, if you've been to any bar past 2 a.m., you've heard Trey's music. I guarantee it. You know? So I thought that was super cool. But then I'm also like, wait, there's like this other song that is absolutely amazing. So that's been fun to be a part of that camp and like keep pushing on the success of Dick Down in Dallas, but then also be able to show like, oh, it's not just Dick Down in Dallas. Like go listen to his whole discography. Everything's genuinely really good. And I genuinely mean it because I wasn't even introduced to him. I heard him through another room and I was like, that is a killer song. And so that's been really cool. Switch over to Haley. That has been wild. And I think it's been wild for her too. Like, I can't speak for her, but it was cool to get on board that early. She obviously had her crazy viral moment that I don't think anyone in the world hasn't seen that video. Mm-hmm. But then to be a part of a brand where there's more to her than just that one catchphrase, because she could have just rode that for right. the few years. But it's like, she is genuinely like a really nice person. She has depth to her where she's funny. Like, if you're around her, she has these, here's how I'll explain it. So I do video with her and I'll tell her a line and she does not say that line at all. She just kind of needs to be like, where are we going with this video? And it's like, we're headed this direction. I'll be like, say something like this. And she says something totally not that, with like a word you've never heard before in your life, because she's so Southern and just from this tiny town in Tennessee. And it's just like, it's magic. Like, you can't recreate that. I can't sit down and write that on a script. She has that viral moment that happened to be captured on Broadway, you know? So it's been cool to be a part of that and see her start doing so many things with dog shelters. Like, she could have just gone the easy route and been an influencer in LA and done that. And that's not easy either, but
yeah,
that's one route. And instead she's like still in Tennessee. And
she was dormant for a while. Like,
yeah,
right after that video blew up, everyone was like, who is this girl?
Yeah.
And no one knew. And then it came out like, okay, this is who it is. And by then, I think it kind of, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I think it probably just took her a minute to like, I'm blowing up. It's changing my life. Like, people are recognizing me.
Yeah.
Like, people that knew her, but then like,
yeah, there's like you went viral in your school for doing something, and then there's like you're going viral in your town for doing something, and who knows at that the shock of that. Imagine going viral to the entire world overnight, you know. I don't know what those few days were like for her, but I'm sure it was interesting, you know. Possibly entertaining and like, cool, what could I do with this? But I'm sure most of it was like just crazy. Like, the most celebrities work for years and years and get all sorts of treated weird and all the grind.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're kind of prepared at least a little bit for the moment. It's like, with her, it was like overnight.
I think that's a good point to like touch on for a second, is that with social media, especially like you being in marketing, and Mitch, like if you go listen to the episode again, like, we really touch on the music marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And just the algorithm of social media, even though nobody has it figured out, Mitch has got it figured out for the most part, I'd say. He understands it a little bit more than the average human. But it's just insane that at any given moment you could blow up. And you think about 5-10 years ago in Nashville, you had to go play on Broadway and play cover gigs and try and toss in original songs. I wasn't here. I don't know if you could play much originals. But you were just hoping that so-and-so was at Tootsie's that knew someone that knew someone that happened to work at a huge major label. Yeah. And it was like, then you just hope that the word got back to them and they actually came and saw you. It just kind of like that.
Yeah.
But now it's like, I mean, I could take a video of myself playing with an acoustic guitar. I could have just learned a song 5 minutes ago, post myself singing it and playing it on the guitar, and 15 million views later, I'm signed to a major.
Yep.
So it's like, it's crazy how times have changed, and at any given moment you could blow up and your career could change.
Yep. I think that's definitely what happened for her. And my personal opinion on it is she's handled it with like as much grace as you can. Like, you're inevitably going to have things to get used to.
Well, I mean, just to kind of, I guess, play off what we were saying about the virality of like modern music and just like influencers, there are a lot of people that come and do the grind of like, whether you're in like an artist doing music or you're an actress or actor, or like you just want to be an influencer. Like, it takes years. And I mean, I know people that are now in the millions on TikTok doing the thing that have been trying to be an influencer for 3, 4, 5 years. And then something finally hits.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's hard for them to see someone that just posts one video and it blows up. It's not a gradual thing.
Yeah.
And I know, like you were just kind of saying, and I've seen it with artists, where it's, they have that viral moment and their life changes in an instant.
Yeah.
And they have no idea what to do. And I saw it. I talked to on Sunday, I was talking to an artist that he just blew up out of nowhere, and he's getting, taking all these meetings, signing deals. And it's like, dude, you're a kid and your parents aren't even with you. Like, you're just here figuring it out, like listening to other people that have had similar moments, and you're kind of just like figuring it out. And yeah. I think that's a little bit scary. Yeah. And so it's good to have people like I guess like you and just people around, like a good camp around mm-hmm. that just kind of like can help navigate.
Yeah.
Because I mean, someone like her, like it takes a beating on your mental health for sure. Yeah. She went from walking into a Kroger and being able to shop to like, okay, I need to send someone to shop for me.
Yep.
And that's pretty crazy.
Yeah. And the other hard thing is like, everyone wants something from you in those, like, and I'm able to see it, like, literally as a guy standing right next to it, filming, watching all this happen. It's like, if a business gets, if they take a picture with this business on at that time, especially, everything was going viral about her in specific, because everyone was trying to figure out, who is this girl? It mm-hmm. wasn't like there was a body of work you could go and figure it out and go, cool, that's who that is. It's like, there's no information other than very, very charismatic, funny, and we're learning who this person is. So it's like, everyone wants something out of you all of a sudden. And it's like, how do you handle that as just like genuinely a normal person? I give major props to her. You're supposed to ride that wave just immediately, like day one. It's I give her props and genuinely like wish her tons of success. Now it's cool. We get to be a part of it, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there will be a lot more to come with yeah. that. A lot more success.
Yeah.
But yeah, just like kind of on the marketing side, like what are some of the biggest, I guess, like six, like what's a decent way to like go about the marketing as an artist?
Yeah.
And I know like we kind of talked about your role in the marketing, like you're not so much the music marketing, mm-hmm. but you understand marketing.
Yeah.
So like kind of what's your advice to the artists that are trying to market themselves on social media and have that, I guess, viral moment without chasing a viral moment?
Yeah.
That's a very complex question I just asked.
Yeah.
But like, it's a big question.
It's also like person by person, which is a little bit difficult, but like, it's very blanket and boring to say consistency, but that's what I've seen with the brands that we've been working with is, you have to stay consistent, because a lot of the times what I see is like people have really good months and they're like, cool, I started to see it grow. And then you fall off, just as any human does, because you have moments where you're excited about working out and then stuff starts happening. But if you can be consistent and consistently be watching what's working, that's the magic. And I had a meeting with a big label exec who, but it was cool. And I went out with him and he asked, he's like, hey, what's your guys' big selling proposition? Like, what do you guys do so different than everyone else? And, my partner, Mitch Wallace, had a really good answer to it. And then he turned to me and he's like, what's your view on that? I said, we're going to deliver what we said we were going to deliver, the videos on time, well done, consistently. I was like, I think that's going to be put us at least in the top 5%. And this guy knows pretty much everyone in town. And he's like, try 1%. He's like, if you can do that, like you're going to be getting calls from us just constantly. And so it's like, cool, take that at an artist level. If that's what the major label wants, can you as an independent artist do that? You can control that at least. You know, you can't control what song's going number one right now. You might not have the connects to do that, but you can control, is the video, are the videos done right? Are they done well? And are they done on time and consistently? If you can control that part, then I think you're on a really good start. And then it takes smart people to look at it and go like, what's special about you? How do we portray that? Are you more of a personality or are you more of a musician? And you can be both, but some people do better when they're 80% personality content and story wise content. And some people just can absolutely shred. And then you turn a camera on them and you're like, there's zero personality here, you know? And so you just got to find what's special about that person and then go, cool, we're going to amplify those parts of you the best we can to your audience. And it sounds very, you've heard that advice before, but like implemented well, we've seen it work. And yeah, that's what I'd tell them.
On the flip side of that, someone that's trying to get into this, mm-hmm. into the, not the studio part, but the marketing side of things, because yeah. I feel like that's, marketing is such a sought after major in college. Like, whether you go to college or not, like, a lot of people get into marketing, and it's just such a, like, hot major for any college.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot of people come out trying to figure out what they want to do in the marketing world. And I mean, I've dealt with it before. I've had people reach out for internships that are like, hey, I'm a marketing major, would really love to do something in marketing, and I just want to be in the music business. Yeah. So how would they go about kind of making that jump to the, to Nashville, to the music business, and just getting into the marketing side of things?
Yeah. So take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, because I'm fairly new to town. I'll tell you how it kind of worked for me, is I think it's probably going to have to work differently for different people. But, if you can find an artist that you like jive with, I think there are tons of artists in town who desperately need help and also may not have the funding to do it. And if you can ride out like your extra hours with them and prove some sort of success, I'm now hiring for our marketing company, and we have, you know, great artists and contracts and pretty much what you would want as far as like walking into a marketing job. M Squared might be a good option for you. The interviews I've done, I have a lot of people with a degree. I have a lot of people with a lot of opinions about the algorithm and things like that. I don't have a lot of people walking in who are like, here's an artist that I worked with. Here are the videos that we shot. Here is the music, and I had an input on it. It doesn't matter to me if it's you grew them from 1,000 to 3,000. To me, that's more impressive than saying you took a course in college. Even though I find that super valuable too. When I see a degree, I'm like, cool, they had the gumption to do it.
Exactly.
But taking it that next step and being like, I've done this. And then the other big part of it when we're hiring is like, is this person going to be cool around the music industry? So if you haven't been around it that much, I would definitely say like, go to concerts and see how they're acting, volunteer at a concert, maybe, you know, like whatever it takes to get in the world, start doing that and learn how to operate in that environment, because we can't send you on the road with an artist if the artist is going to fire back and be like, yeah, don't send that weirdo. You know, like you have to be enough of a hang, but yet professional. And it's this weird balance that you have to
100%.
Do. But, and then as far as marketing goes, I think if I could go back and talk to myself a little bit, I would have told myself that not everything has to be a unique, crazy idea. Like, I thought everything had to be original 100%. Like, I got to do this a brand new way. And I believe that's true. But I think a lot of the cool things that are happening and a lot of the marketing that I'm seeing working is blending two things and going like, I really like this style of music and I like this product. This product's marketing did this. That's kind of smart. How would I do that in with a guitar? And I don't know how to bridge that, but just start coming up with those ideas that it's like, you're not reinventing the wheel, but you are doing something different music industry wise by pulling from other things that you love. And then now you have your own taste. You have your own type of video that you do. And then also you can copy people too. That's not a terrible way to start, is to go like, I love what this photographer did. I'm going to try to get that shot, because inevitably it's not going to be that shot, because that photographer is that photographer. But you can find what you love and go like, cool, how do I make a good lip syncing video that looks like that? They did it on stairs, and I think the camera angle was like this, and the artist did this, and you're going to go shoot it, and it's probably going to suck. And you're going to look at it in the editing bay, and you're going to go, why isn't this what he did? And part of it's years of doing it, but it's also like, cool, the lighting sucked. I didn't even think about lighting. These basic things that once you're hired on at M Squared and we send you on a few shoots, if you're coming back consistently with crap, I can't keep you on. Mm-hmm. So it's like, go through that yourself and then come in and be like, here's what I did. It looks pretty darn good. And I can see potential. I'm not the arbiter of all truth of who's good and who's not, but like, what we need is good people who have good ideas and can at least execute some basic ideas. And then you're going to start being surrounded by the Raise Rowdy guys and different levels of talent that you're going to then have to grow and become great at marketing. I don't know if you just like, I know you don't stumble into that. It's mm-hmm. like a progression to get there.
I kind of want to backtrack real quick and and revert back to one of the things, a couple of things that you had mentioned. Like first the college thing.
Yeah.
Like you see a college degree, and I think the point that you made that like they had the gumption to go and like do it. And my that was something my dad always told me, because especially coming to Nashville, I kind of got into the business and I started being here more. And I had in-person classes at the time.
Where did you go?
Florida Gulf Coast.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I was going there and I was like flying back and forth between Nashville and Fort Myers. Southwest is a direct flight. I was going there like twice a month. And it got to a point where I was like, Dad, I'm like finding success in Nashville. I'm kind of just wasting my time and money flying back and forth. Like, I'm just going to move to Nashville. And he was like, son, nobody's going to care about your GPA. No employer, like no one's going to care about your GPA. All they're going to see is the fact you had the work ethic and the discipline to go to school for 4 years. In my case, it was five, but go to school for 5 years and like finish the degree no matter what, especially in your situation. Like you didn't have to, but you did.
Yep.
And I think that is a huge point. Like there are a lot of times on this podcast that I talk negatively about college for this industry because I don't think it's necessary.
Right.
But like my brother goes to Belmont. He's a music business major. Like he'll graduate with a degree in music business, but I still preach experience. Like I think, just like you kept saying, being in Nashville, meeting the right people and going out and doing the things that how you want to spend your career. If you want to spend your career as a photographer, buy a camera, find an artist. And even if you're doing it for free, find an artist just to build that portfolio and work. I mean, if you want to tour manage, find a tour manager and say, hey, like I will come. Can I come on the road with you? I'll figure out. I'll drive and tail the bus and drive myself and just like shadow you for like a 3-show run.
Yep.
Like trial by fire.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I did. And then the other thing that you had said was being a good hang and like learning how to be around the business.
Yep.
And that's such a huge part that I don't think has ever been touched on this podcast. And it, for me, it was, I didn't just jump right into it. I like listened to podcasts, Raise Rowdy one specifically, like Matt Barillo's Outside, or it was In the Round at the time, the Raise Rowdy podcast. And I went to Live Oak and I went to all these places where these artists were going to be. And I was just around it, introducing myself to people. And I kind of learned how everybody worked.
Yep.
But there are people that will jump right into it and they'll get like a fresh out of college. They'll get a job at a label and they're around some A-listers, B-listers. And then it's like they don't know how to act.
Yeah.
They don't know how to be a cool hang. They're kind of fangirly.
Yeah, and screw it up at Live Oak.
Yeah.
Have your weird moments. Exactly. Of like, oh, I should probably, that came off weird. Have that with a writer who's also there trying to figure it out themselves.
And blame it on the surf sides. Be like, oh, that wasn't me. I just drank a little too many surf sides.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think just knowing how to, and it sounds so stupid, like for an outsider kind of listening, they're like, oh, like you don't fangirl? No, I absolutely fangirl.
Me too.
Like, I mean, I've been around major A-listers where I'm like, holy shit, that's so-and-so. But you kind of have to like just keep it inside and treat them like a normal person. And that's something a lot of people don't understand.
Yeah. And I also think like running a content business with artists is like empathizing from the artist's point of view too, where we've been lucky enough to get a few contracts where the person comes in upset about the last content person or the last marketing person because they just weren't cool with them. It's like they were coming up with trends that sucked, that they didn't feel like the artist, and content and social media became like a chore to them. It's like when they saw that on their calendar, if it was a studio day or a write day, it's like, yes. And every time it was a social media day, they're like hating their life because they know that they're going to go in and work with someone who's not super cool or like doesn't know how to treat them well. And oftentimes it's someone straight out of college, and that's okay to be that person and mess that up. But like if you can make an artist go like, oh, these guys are like cool, they treat me normal, they understand that, like, we're playing to get this song viewed. So I have to give in a little bit and, like, make sure I perform it well. And it's, yeah, it's awkward. I'm in public lip syncing, you know, like, but if you can make that feel cool to them and just normal and make them feel at ease, I feel like that's a huge part of the game. And then now they go back to their label and they're like, hey, yo, Mitch, he's cool to work with. Like, yeah, book me another day with him. Or their management goes like, why did this content come out better? And it's like, just being a hang. And I, maybe there's a way to teach that. Like, there's a few books and stuff like that. I'm a self-improvement nerd. Like, there are a few books that teach you some basics, but a lot of it is just like going out. And I've said things in a meeting, like at Live Oak, where I've walked up and I leave the conversation going, why did that not go super well? And it's like, you can kind of look back and go like, ah, when I said this, he got weird.
Yeah.
It's like, well, why? And you might not know why. You're just like most people in this town figuring it out. But then next time you're in that conversation, hopefully you don't say that thing and you leave it and you go like, oh, I'm kind of getting the hang of how to come off normal. And like, I'm not trying to get anything out of them, but also it's just, man, music business is weird.
That's the thing though. That's what I want people to like, listen to this podcast and understand that it's not the fact like you can't, like, I'm not saying you can't go up and talk to somebody that is famous, whether on they're like A, B, C, or they're just like, I mean, anybody. You shouldn't be afraid to go talk to them. It's merely like, if you go up and you act like you shake the person's hand, it's the first time meeting them and you're talking to them like you've known them. And not only that, but like, you know, things about their life, like, you know, things about them just because they're famous,
yeah.
You know, for them, that's weird, a weird interaction.
Yeah.
And it seems like, okay, they came up to me with an agenda.
Yep.
And you're never going to succeed that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I had to learn, because I did that at Live Oak. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so-and-so. I'm going to go up to them, shake their hand back. I love this. I love that you did this. I mean, like, this is awesome. Like,
yeah.
Seeming like you're trying to get something out of them.
Yeah.
And you get shut down immediately. You get like a, yeah, thanks, dude. It was nice to meet you. Back turn. Yep. Like, that's.
Do you have any advice for this? And yeah. It's like, why did I ask that? Like, yeah. That's so weird. I just, think about it. You just met that person.
Yeah. And I think that is a great question to ask.
Yes.
At a coffee, or like the second time you meet them, like when you get to know them. Yep. If you jump right into it, I mean, that's like, and it, someone listening to this podcast, like I said, might be like, this is the stupidest conversation ever. Like, I don't, like, why are you even saying this? Like,
yeah.
People do that. I did it a million times.
Me too.
To the point where I was like, I just asked advice. Like, I don't, why did they just kind of blow me off like that? Are they mean people?
Yeah.
No, it's like, they're human beings. And whether they're an artist or someone in the industry, like you, if yeah. Someone comes up to you at Live Oak after they listen to this podcast or wherever, Losers or any bar, and they're just like coming up and just like knowing all this stuff about you from listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to know how to, if they come up and they're like, oh, well, I found out Mitch is hiring at M Squared. Like, I'm going to go up to him and just like pretty much interrogate him and try and get a job out of him.
I'm sure for the head of Sony, their life is exhausting. I have a story about this. If mm-hmm. I don't know if
yeah, no, you got time.
Okay, on time.
Yeah.
So I'll just say another big record label executive. I was working at a very nice building downtown with a big record label, and I was working super late a Friday night, and I get in the elevator. I spilt coffee on myself. Like, it was end of the week, done, but I was busting my tail for this music industry company to try to just level up. I think now looking back, I know what happened, but in the moment, exhausted, end of week, getting in the elevator, and there's this guy in there, and he's like, hey, you know, how are you? And I'm talking with him. Turns out it's a major record label exec, top of the label. I don't know him because I didn't do research about, and I should have, looking back, I should have gone on LinkedIn, maybe looked at a few of the top executives. So I'm meeting with the head of one of the top, you know, four record exec or record labels in town. And kind of where I want to be ultimately at that time, I would have loved to have a job there. And I'm talking with him and I'm treating him totally normally. And we're shooting the crap, and I like to give people crap all the time. And so like, he was wearing weird yellow shoes. I'm like, hey, nice shoes, man. You know, and just totally normal. And afterward, he's like, "What do you do?" And I told him what I was doing. I do marketing for this music industry company. He's like, "Hey, it was really nice to meet you." I was like, "What do you do?" And he's like, "Sorry, I jumped around." I was like, "What do you do?" And he's like, "Oh, I run a few things at this label." And I was like, "That's really cool." I was like, "Since you guys moved in, parking here has been a pain in my ass." And he just busts out laughing. And I'm like, "Cool, like I have like this cool rapport going with this guy." And then he gets off on the elevator on the second floor of the parking ramp, which nobody can park on the second. That's all like reserved VIP, you know. And I'm like, "Oh shoot, who is that guy?" Because I had literally been making fun of him the whole elevator ride. And so I call the owner of the marketing company. I'm like, "Hey, I just talked to this record executive. And I was kind of rude. Like I was treating him like I would in a bar setting where I'm just like, "Hey, nice shirt, weirdo, you know?" And he's like, "That is the perfect thing you could have done." He's like, "Don't worry about it. Like next time he sees you, he'll actually talk to you." He's like, "That guy, if you would have in that elevator been started talking about your company, an artist that you love, a video that you love, hey, my sister sings," or, you know, that is all he hears all day. The fact that you just like treated him normally.
Yeah. Like
the next time you see him, he's going to initiate a conversation because you treated him normal.
And that's like, relieving for somebody that's like a higher up, because it happens all the time where it's like everybody, especially like in situations like we kind of talked about where you immediately hit your viral moment, everybody you've ever known is probably going to want something from you.
Yeah.
"Oh, like I knew this person. I knew you when." Like you're going to get a lot of those the higher up that you get. And I think it's just like treating, I mean, we're all normal people. Like
yeah.
All the A-listers, B-listers, and every executive, no matter how high you are, everybody's a normal person living a life that we just happen to be in a cool industry.
Yeah. And I was so new to town that like, if I would have known who he was when I was in that elevator, I would have made that mistake. Yeah. I would have been like, "Hey, I'm a great marketing, you know, are you hiring?" You know, I would have done that because I was so green. And it's like knowing that that is actually how it should have been done. And I can send a follow-up email to him and go, "Hey, it was nice to meet you in the elevator. Just letting you know, this is what I do. Not expecting you to take any action on it. It was just nice to meet you. And I figured if you ever need someone for this, let me know." I didn't do that because I was working for another company, but like there's a chance he responds to that email. He does not respond to that email if in the elevator I was pitching him hard.
Right.
But it's hard because
that's literally a situation for your elevator pitch.
Literally. Yeah. It's hard though.
Don't do it.
I hate something about, I wish I could just like see where people are. That is a hard thing about the music industry. Being at Live Oak is like, I may have a great conversation with you. And go like, "Oh, he works at, you know, so I'm going to get the," and it's like, everyone's friends with everyone in this town and everyone's not trying to step on anyone's toes. So it's, that is something I still haven't figured out about networking. It's just, everyone's so nice to everyone. You can't necessarily tell what's real and what's not real until you finally get a call or the right moment and you're that on that guy's mind. But it is hard. Sometimes I just want to like get so angry and just be like, why can't this guy just hire me for a video shoot?
Yeah.
I definitely have those thoughts. Cause it's like, I see him out all the time and we have a great time. "What's up, man?" You know, everything like that. But yet he's calling this guy and I don't know the backstory. And part of me just wants to walk up and potentially ruin the relationship by going, "Hey, why haven't you hired me?"
Yeah.
But man, how weird is that?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I'm just making this up. I've heard little things about like people saying stuff like this, but to me it's 20% business, 80% relationships.
Yeah.
Like that is, and that's why I harp so much on the, like, how to have a conversation with someone in the industry. And like I said, for the third time, it's like people hear that don't understand Nashville and don't understand the industry. And they're like, "Why are you even talking about that? I'm a human. I know how to have a normal person, like normal conversation." But it's like people don't get it because when you're in the industry and you want something so bad, even for me, I struggle with it. I'm like, "Oh man, I would really love to have that person in my network. Like I would love to go up and introduce myself and just, you know, just chop it up."
Yeah.
And just like let them know me and hope something comes of it. But it's like organic. Just let it happen organically.
Yeah.
And you know, it will happen over time if you're in the right places. And it's a lot of just seeing your face. Like there are people that I know that I don't know, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like I've been to losers every night, to where I'm just like, I've seen them every night, to where like we get to a point where we walk past each other and we just dap each other up. I don't know your name. I don't know what you do, but it's like I dap you up because I know you.
Yeah.
But I don't know you.
Yeah.
So that's like the more that happens over time, I mean, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
So well, I think that's a huge part, huge thing to like understand if you're green within the industry, like just trying to figure out how to navigate it and like you're fresh to move here, even for like the Belmont kids, like,
yeah,
be a cool hang.
Oh, circling back to the college thing, that is one big advantage of college is internships, because I'll have people, and I maybe some people don't know this, I'll have people hit me up for internships who aren't in college, and I'm not an employment lawyer here, I'm just going by what I've read. It's like there's not an exchange of value there. You basically have to volunteer at that point. And there's just weird muddiness there when you're volunteering. Now, are you owed a job? Are you not owed a job? It's like internships are a very clear contract with a employer where it's like, I'm going to come in. I'm going to probably not bring as much value as I should because I'm new. And I'm green and I'm fresh out of college. And this is the end date when I leave, and I do a great job for you for 3 months. And then you can leave on good terms with that person. You can't do that as an employee. You can't go into a company for 3 months, do a great job, and then go, I'm so happy I did a good job. I learned everything I wanted to from this company. I know the inner workings of the digital marketing space. I'm leaving. It's like, well, why did I train you? All these things. It's a different mentality. So that is a big advantage if you are thinking about going to Belmont or Lipscomb or MTSU or you name it.
To touch on that, I don't think, as much as we bring up those universities, it's because we are in Nashville. I did not go there. I don't think it's necessary. There are schools that have music business programs. I believe Miami has one. West Virginia has one. University of Georgia. There are a bunch of schools that have one. And you also don't need to major in music. You can major in psychology and come here and work in the music business.
Yes. Yeah, no, I'm. That's a good catch.
I just wanted to let everybody know.
Because I didn't go to those.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like, I'm also a hypocrite here. I'm just saying, like, from a hiring point of view, and yeah, you are right. It is. I'll have people hit up our job posting, our internship posting from all over the place. And I really don't care. It's more like, can you do the job? Are you willing to be here? Cool, come on board. And some of our long-standing, I haven't made a hire out of an internship, but I have done like gigs with interns, and like things happen where it's like I had an artist who needed a venue, and now this guy who interned with me 2 years ago is the head of sound at that place. There you go, boom, now I'm in that venue. And why that venue? Because I knew that guy from that internship. So I think if you're considering college, that's one thing to consider, is like killing the internships, making it a point to do them. And I'm, because I'm not with a label, I'm also an advocate of not necessarily going to a label, because I have heard experiences from it. And I think it's good to see it. But also, if you're considering going to like an independent business like ours, you're going to do a lot more things. You're going to have your hands in a lot more things. So if I were to tell someone to do something, I would say maybe try to get in with a major one so you can see what that world's like, and then also get in with one of these like boutique places that's going to put some responsibility on you, because they're not going to put responsibility on you to go out with their flagship artist. It's label's not made for that. You're going to be doing admin tasks and a few TikToks maybe like that. Here you can come on, and if you're good and you can walk in and say, hey, I can edit videos, sure, I'm probably not going to put you on our top client, but you can be editing videos next week, and that's one way to get in.
Sweet, dude. What's, to kind of cap it off, like, what's your biggest piece of advice to anybody that's trying to get into the music industry, period?
Man, I haven't been asked that.
Now you're being publicly asked.
Now I'm being publicly asked.
At all the millions of people that listen to this podcast.
Yeah, we're burning it down with views on this one. My advice, dude, I don't know if I would take my advice. I definitely am more in a place now, and I think I'll probably look back on this in 5 years and think I'm an idiot, but I have definitely given myself over to God's plan on this, because I've tried and tried and tried to like control other people and control situations and contracts and all that type of stuff to get where I want to go. And I'm finding it like more and more, the more I hold on just like lightly, I'm like, it goes better. So it's like, I was supposed to, how City Limits Studios happened was I was actually told to get out of the building, because everything was going down. And that week I freaked out, cause that was where I was producing all my music, all my videos, everything. And right around the corner, God was like, oh yeah, do you want to take over the whole building? And it's impossible to take that advice, especially when you're young. And I'm probably going to have to give myself this advice, but it's like, just like, let it play out. Like, keep trying to do the good thing, do the right thing. And if it goes wrong, you kissed a frog and move on to the next one. I've been in businesses now with the music industry that went extremely poorly. Hated it, wanted to move home. And then now all of a sudden I'm on a totally different side where I'm working with someone who's absolutely incredible. And I'm going to learn something in the next year where I'm like, this part of working on this side of the business sucks. I want to go a different direction. So just like letting it play out, show up every single day, do the best you possibly can, try to do right by people. I've seen some people that I've come up with and I get upset that they're further along than me. They're also further along because they're willing to burn more bridges than I am. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I'm kind of taking the slower road, and I think it's the right road. I don't know. We'll see how it goes, we end up where we want to be. But like, at least I can look back on most of the people I worked with and go like, I tried to do the right thing in that scenario, and then let God take control from there and be like, cool, I'm going to put Mitch Wallace in your building. You had no idea that was going to happen. And you're going to get asked on a random Tuesday to go out and film this thing, and then a company's gonna form, you're gonna own the building. Like, none of this was the plan,
dude. No, that I think that's actually probably my favorite piece of advice anyone's given on this podcast, because I believe that wholeheartedly. Like, when we make plans, God laughs at them.
Yeah,
because he can sit there and watch us make all these plans. Oh, I'm gonna do this and this, and I'm gonna become this, and I'm gonna make this much money. And it's like, and then it just goes completely sideways. Like, yep. That is not it at all. And I am that. Like, I had a plan of, like, here is what I'm going to do. I'm going to become a firefighter. I had it all planned out. I'm going to live my life in Fort Myers and, like, do all this. And then it was just, like, opportunities came, and it just led me to where I am now. And it continues to do that. People leave my life, and another person comes back in that's just, like, I see why that happened. And yep. The older you get, you start to see things like that, things from, like, the past. And I think, I mean, that's a huge piece of advice, dude. That's awesome.
It's so hard, especially when you're fresh out of, like, I feel like I'm just now maybe graduating out of, like, the newbie to Nashville class. Maybe I'm still in that, but, like, I feel like we're starting to figure out who a few people are and everything like that. But it's, like, it's so hard to take that advice, and I know you're probably not going to if you're in that scenario, because it's, like, I have 3 years to work this out. My rent's crazy high. I have to get to this position. I have to meet this person. And I think ambition's good, and that will lead you to the place. So, like, make the goals, go after the goals. But when that door doesn't open, like, good. Like, something else is going to happen, and you met this person. And that might be being kicked out of the place and going, I live in a van. I have nothing to my name. I'm about to turn 30 years old. All hell's breaking loose, and I thought I was going to be top marketing guy in Nashville by the time I was going to be 30 under 30. And it's like, cool, that wasn't in the plan, and now all of a sudden it's like, this worked out. I know we're trying to end, but like, I was at Walmart filling up water coolers for this facility. If 19-year-old me knew that was playing music, like, you're going to be in Nashville filling up water coolers on a Saturday night when everyone else is on these giant tours and all this stuff, like, I would have been super, like, upset about that. But then it's like, you also own a facility, and you're meeting, I'm probably meeting 40 to what, 100 people a week that I didn't know by owning this facility. It's like, there's no way to plan it, dude. There's maybe somebody has the magic pill that I don't, but like, I think you just got to roll with it and just be like, keep showing up, try to make smart financial decisions if you can, so you can ride out the storm and then be excited when a storm's happening, because you're getting pushed in the direction, hopefully, you're supposed to go.
Yeah. I think trusting in God's plan is probably the hardest thing to do. No matter, like, what you believe, it's, I mean, it's tough because you want things to happen. Like there are wants. We're human. You know, we want to be successful. We want that door to open, and we can try and push it open as much as possible. But if he doesn't want it to open, it won't. And it's just like being content with that. Yep. And finding the peace. And that's where faith comes in. That's like,
oh yeah,
believing what you don't see, because mm-hmm. he sees it all. You don't see the big picture.
When we're talking spiritually, I feel like there's a new thing that I'm just now starting to get at, because running this facility is a little out of my control. Like, I can't control what that photographer is going to do. I can't, like, there's so many variables that when I was a freelancer, I could control most of the variables. I'm holding the camera. I have the lights up. Like, most things are controlled by me. There is chaos happening in this building. It's a creative building at all hours. Anything could go. At first, it's like, cool. Once something bad happens to me, then I'll be cool with trusting God and being like, okay, God, I'll give it over to you at this point. I was controlling it. Now I'm giving it over to you. I'll trust your plan. And that's a good place to be. And I feel like that's where I've been the past few years. And we'll see what this next year is like. Maybe I'll hate this advice, but like, I'm now switching that relationship with God and going like, hey, this is in your hands, and I'm going to make this decision and let you handle this. And so like, there was a situation with a tenant that wasn't super exciting. And it's like, I don't have a full plan in my head. And the old me would have like penciled it all out, gotten it all perfect and all this stuff, and tried like heck to leave God out of it and been like, I can control this. Mm-hmm. And now I'm getting to a point where I'm just like, cool, you know what? I don't know what. I want to know who's going to handle this way better is just letting. And if it's not God to you, higher power or whatever it is for you. But for me, God, letting God do what he's going to do in that scenario. And I go, hey, I know this isn't the direction I want to go, so I'm going to make this decision and let you help me figure it out. And that's like, I'm hoping that leads to a better result than just finally getting to the point where I'm kicking and screaming and going like, fine, God, okay, come on, you know, help me out in this scenario. I was trying to control this. Now it's like, cool, you do you, put the right person in the right, in that room, and I'll let it be yours.
And that's something that I've been working on to get better at, because in the industry, like, you are trying to control everything. I've struggled with that in all aspects of my life. It's like, I'm trying to control things that I have no control over whatsoever. And it's a lot more freeing when you're just like giving it to God. And when you get to that point, it is a lot more freeing, and you find yourself a lot more successful. But yeah, dude, I mean, that's awesome.
Thanks for letting me talk about that. This podcast is sick.
And I also want to add, I think on one of my other podcasts, I ended with this too, is people focus so much on, like you mentioned, 30 under 30.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have that. I want to be a billboard power player. Like, I want to have all these accolades. But at the end of the day, nobody cares. Like, God doesn't care what you have. All he cares about are the people that you impacted, the people that you bring with you at the end. You know, it's like the people you impacted.
Yep.
And that's why when I say 80% relationships, it's not just relationships to bring you to the next level in the business. It's relationships because you're trying to like impact people. Like, you're in a hard industry that we struggle every day. Like, it's tough.
Yeah.
It changes every day. And it's finding that group of people and just impacting others and empowering others and just kind of like surrounding yourself with the right people. And that's how you grow as a person, as a like in your walk with Christ, your job in the business, whatever it is you are doing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's all the people around you.
How many years am I in now? I've been here 7 years, and I'm just now, and maybe I could have, there's maybe some strategies, if I was listening to a podcast like this, I might have employed some different strategies, but like, I'm just now finding the people that I like being around.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 7 years to figure that out. And also being okay with the fact that the group that I thought I wanted to be around is not who I fit with, or not what I thought it was. You know, it's super hard. And those people you want to keep the relationship open, because I don't know what the next season of this looks like. You know, it's like, I may be working with those people, but I really had it in my head that that was the camp I wanted to be around. And then it's like, I end up in this raised rowdy degenerate. Like everyone in this camp has just been super welcoming to me. I don't know what it's like for someone who might not fit in this group though, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, dude, just ride it out. I feel like 7 years is a long time. I think it took me a long time to find my little group of people that I like being around. But like now all of a sudden it just feels like the opportunity that's going to you and the opportunity that comes to me, it's like we're able to help each other out in this, and now we're both growing together, and it's really cool. And I haven't had that for a little bit. So finding your community, I think
100%
huge.
2 years, 3 years, 4 years, even 6 months from now, you could have a completely different group of people. Like, and I think going back to the faith thing, it's, if they're not meant to be in your life, they're not going to be in your life. And that goes for anything. I'm not here to give like life advice,
sure,
but it's just like, it's when you're in such a, I mean, this industry is straight up cutthroat.
Yep.
I mean, it's sink or swim, do or die. Like there's whenever like you come up, there's someone like tailing you right behind you that if you don't do it, they're going to pass you right up. And that's whether you're an artist, you do marketing, or you're an A&R or anything. There's always someone that is right behind you that's a little bit hungrier than you.
Yep.
And it's just like that faith, it has to ground you. Yep. And I'm not like pushing this on anybody. Like you can end the podcast right here.
Yeah.
But like, this is my podcast. I'm saying it.
Dude, I have to add one more thing, because music business, I'm trying to think of like me listening to this podcast 3 years ago. What would have helped me? And part of our payment, because like you were saying how tough it is. It's like, sometimes I'm like, dude, if I just did marketing for dentistry, I would probably be a multimillionaire. You know, I could have been on a different 30 under 30, not the Nashville version of it, you know. But part of it took me a little bit to learn that part of the financial gain is the opportunities we have around us. Mm-hmm. So it's like, take that into consideration when you're out there working your butt off and you're in the office till who knows in the morning, and you kind of look at your paycheck and you're like, dude, my friend got a marketing degree and is working at a plumbing shop doing marketing for them, and he's making more money than me, has benefits, all this stuff. It's like, yeah, but he's not backstage at a Thomas Rhett concert on a Friday night because he knew that guy. And you know, like, that's part of your payment. And I think that I wish I would have heard that earlier and been like, cool, part of my payment is the people I get to be around, all of us crazy people making art all day, and somehow we make enough money to at least pay our bills.
Yeah,
that's a huge part of it.
And I want to close with,
yep,
comparison is the thief of joy.
Yeah.
Like that is something that no matter what you do, everybody struggles with it. In this industry, you see people coming up, like I talked about those people, and we talked about the viral moments.
Yep.
So like those influencers that see Haley just like blow up overnight, they're probably pretty upset. Like, oh man, I've tried so hard. Or someone that sees an artist blow up 15 million views overnight, and then they're signed into a major label without ever playing a show. You have those people that have been in Nashville 10, 11, 12 years, and they're like, I hate that person.
Yeah.
But they don't understand anything. But it's like, for me even, it's like, oh man, I see so-and-so, I'm 24, I see so-and-so's 23, and they're 30 under 30. Or they got 30 under 30 when they were 22, and it's like, or they've gotten it multiple times now. Like, I see that stuff, and it's tough for me to, like, be okay with it.
Yeah.
But then you kind of have to remember, like, comparison is the thief of joy. That will kill you in this business or any aspect of your life.
Oh, yeah.
If you keep comparing yourself. And
dude, our artists, I don't know. I mean, I know the audience of your thing will get it, but like, artists deal with it on a crazy level, but also music business people deal with it too. Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, why did he get that A&R job? Like, I feel like I could, you know, it's so hard to like ground yourself. I personally try to deploy prayer constantly. It's just like reminding myself I'm on a big rock and I'm not that big of a deal. And then just also knowing that like it's that person got that opportunity for a good reason, and mine will come another day.
Absolutely.
But it dude, in those moments, like call me, I'm good on a podcast right now, but call me on a Friday when it happens to me, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course I'm going to be like why did that person get that social media contract? I should have gotten that. Man, it's a rough business, you know?
Yeah, dude.
But it's fun.
Yeah, I
don't
want
to discourage people.
No, yeah, this is a great, great industry because we are doing what we love. We're passionate about this. That's why we can sit here for an hour and a half and just like talk. I mean, there was no agenda to this conversation. Mm-mm. Like there was no start here, finish here.
Yeah.
It was just flowing and just talking about things that we love. And I think that's important to do what you love and what you're passionate about. Yeah, dude, I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. I
loved our
this
conversation.
This is super cool. Yeah. I'm also happy that we've turned, seeing each other in passing to seeing each other at Live Oak to, now having an hour conversation. You're super cool, dude. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening to episode 28 with Mitch Gowdy. We'll see y'all next episode.